Hey, and thanks for listening. This is Conversations, the True Voice Media podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Gibbard. Let's get started. This is episode 30 of Conversations, the True Voice Media podcast, and I'm here today with a very fabulous man who is literally on the opposite side of the globe, a man named Dan Norris, who is the co-founder now of WP Curve. Dan, tell the nice people all about yourself. Say hi.
Well, thanks for having me. Hi. Yeah, I'm in Australia. I'm on the beach. It's 10 a.m. in the morning, which is, I think it's nighttime where you are.
Yeah.
And I'm also in the future, which is cool.
Well, that's pretty neat.
Yeah,
I like
Friday.
To think that I'm in the future as well, but, you know, remains to be seen.
Well, what day is it there?
Good question. Thursday.
Well, it's Friday here, so
you're
not
that.
In the future.
So can you tell me anything about the future that may help me? I mean, lottery numbers or anything like that? Do you have anything that might – I don't know. You know, I'm just poking it around. Maybe there's something you could do to help me make money.
I can tell you it's nice in the future. That's about it.
So are you literally sitting on the beach right now?
Oh, well, yeah, I'm sitting on a chair at my kitchen table, but my place is on the beach, so I'm watching. There's lots of people walking today. It must be like a school walkathon or something.
Wow, so you are just literally looking out at the ocean and sand and such.
I am, and normally, like, when I have these interviews, I'll often, like, see dolphins or whales or something, and I'll just get sidetracked and we'll start talking about that. So if that happens, then you know what's going on.
I mean, I'm quite all right with that. I really like dolphins and whales and such. But, you know, I'm not going to lie to you. That's a bit depressing for me. I'm sitting in an office building in the middle of Philadelphia in Old City, and it's dark out, so I feel like your view is better, and I'm a little sad we're not doing a video chat then.
Well, comparison is the thief of joy.
So true. Who said that? Was that Oscar Wilde?
I don't know. It's a good quote, though.
Yeah, I don't know. I just made that up. I have no idea.
I'll just say yes. Yeah, Oscar Wilde.
That totally works. So Dan, I'm glad that we got a little bit of time to connect today, and I know that you're running on kind of a tight schedule today, so I'm glad we could steal a couple minutes with one another and just kind of catch up, talk about some things. So I want to dive right into stuff and talk to you a little bit about, you know, what you do and why you do it, and hopefully the people who are listening, what I want them to get out of this is a couple actionable things that they can walk away with based on, you know, the work that you've done and the success that you've had. So where I really like to start is, you know, I just, as before we got on the podcast, I told you, you know, I was listening to a couple of things you've done recently and some of the things you've written, and one of the things I stumbled across was your interview with John Lee Dumas on Entrepreneur on Fire. And as I was listening to it, I was actually out for dinner eating chicken wings at the moment. And what it kept occurring to me was like, wow, this guy is a lot like me. And what I mean by that is that you are just a true entrepreneur at heart. You've tried a bunch of things, you've failed at a bunch of things, you've learned a lot, and you've ultimately come back to some things. And even as much success as you've had, you're still hungry for more and are unwilling to kind of settle on what you've got. There's always kind of ambition for more. I guess, you know, where I want to start is, when did you know? You know, you know, is it a sort of thing that in retrospect you can look back and say, you know, from my lemonade stand days, I knew that I was an entrepreneur, or did it hit you one day? What's your story?
Not really. It's funny. The first time I can remember even thinking about it was at university. I had a mate who for whatever reason, he just told me like he was going to be a successful business person. I'm like, well, how do you actually know that? Like, it's good to like aim for that. But he's like, no, I just know that's going to happen. I'm like, well, if you can do it, then I can do it because I'm as smart as you. So that's the first time I ever thought about it. But that was like well out of school. Up until then, I'd been pretty slack with everything, even after that for a while. But he ended up sort of working in a job and has been very successful with that. And I ended up not really lasting very long in the workforce and going out and starting my own businesses, which is kind of weird. But it wasn't – I didn't really – do that until 6 or 7 years later. University, maybe 4 or 5 years later when I started my first business. And since then, I just sort of knew that I would be unemployable. So I've had to sort of figure out a way to make my businesses work, because I just don't think I could really go back to working for someone else.
So is that what it is, though? Because I often use the and this is a stolen term from a friend of mine, psychologically unemployable. I don't think that I have the internal fortitude to be able to manage somebody who has the authority to tell me no. I just can't deal with it. But is that your thing, or is it, you know, would you say it's an equal parts, man, I just have to be out there doing my own thing, you know, so I can hang my hat on my result? Or is it more about the fact that, you know, it's the only option left because I'm not going to listen to somebody? I need to, you know, carve my own path.
I think it's both now. I mean, at the start, it was like, you know, I just want to go out and do something significant. I don't want to work for someone my whole life. But now that I've been working for myself for 9 years, I just couldn't go back. So psychologically, I just couldn't do it. But also, I mean, your mind just opens up so much when you're an entrepreneur. Like, the stuff I'm working on now is just mind-blowing. Like, after this, we're going to meet with a designer to do the designs for a beer that we're brewing, a brewery that we're opening on the Gold Coast. You know, the last year, I've written 2 books, both bestsellers on Amazon. I've got a couple of businesses I'm working on, a private community, a WP Curves now turning over, you know, more than 80, 90 grand Australian dollars a year, or probably more, actually, probably 100 Australian dollars, 100,000, sorry. That's probably important.
And per month, you said?
Sorry, per month, yeah.
Gee, good God, that's crazy.
Yeah, so, I mean, it's just, you can't have a year like that where all of that has happened and then be content with going back and working, you know, like a 60 grand job a year. Actually, for any money, I mean, I just couldn't go back and work for someone else now. It wouldn't matter how much they paid me. So I think psychologically, you do get to that point where you're like, actually, I've experienced so much that I just can't go back. But early on, it wasn't about that. It was just about like just wanting to, just not really knowing what was possible, and just wanting to have a good crack at something for myself rather than following the path that everyone else was following. And that's, I got that bug pretty early. I worked for 4 years for someone else, and that was enough. And then I got out and started my own business at about 25, 26, I think.
Okay. And one of the things you just said is, you know, you just listed a ton of different things you're working on, from writing the book, which is something that I've been struggling with, to write my books. And, you know, you've got the books, you've got this side project you're working, you've got the brewery, you've got WP Curve. And in the podcast that I heard you on with John Lee Dumas, and then mirroring some of the advice that I've gotten and that had really helped me in my career of really just focusing on one thing, at what point of success, or, you know, I guess at what point did you rise to a point where you could start to then work on all of these side projects? Because I'd imagine, just like me, you have a new idea every day, and it's this idea of, you know, which ones do you follow up on, and how much do you need to keep digging in on that one big idea?
Yeah, so I think I probably worked on WP Curve more or less for a year without doing anything else. And then actually maybe more than that, like we really doubled down on that. The previous year I worked on the previous business for a year solid without doing anything else. And then once WP Curve sort of settled down a little bit, we've got a decent team of 40 plus people around the world now that keep that ticking over. And it's sort of less demanding on me as it used to be. And I'm also wanting to do other things. I had a few online projects I was working on, but I've shut those down, and now I'm ready to work on this offline project with the brewery and just do something different and apply those skills in an offline setting. And I'm excited about doing that. I think I've been working online for a long time, and I'm ready to do something in the real world.
In the quote-unquote real world. Well, yeah. For the people listening that have absolutely no idea whatsoever what WP Curve is, could you just take a minute or two and just break it down for them? You know, what was the, you know, the genesis of the idea, and how you picked that one out of, you know, the myriad of ones that you've had? And then, you know, what is it that you're doing, and who should be, whose ears should be perking up as this is something they should be looking into? Just take a few minutes and just talk about that if you could.
Yeah, well, I mean, if you've got a WordPress site, you'll probably know that from time to time it doesn't do things that it should, or you need, you know, you need a developer to fix something that's broken, or it clashes, a plugin clashes with something else, or you need some good advice on what plugin you should use for achieving a certain outcome. You want to set up analytics, or you want to set up Yoast SEO or something like that. All those little jobs that you have as a WordPress website owner. In the past, really all you could do was find a developer or go through Odesk and try and find a contractor and, you know, hand over your passwords to someone new each time, and try to work with someone on the other side of the world, and or locally, if you have a problem at night time, try to work with someone locally and not get a reply for a day. And our service is unlimited small jobs 24/7. So it takes a lot of the guessing out of the equation, a lot of the responsiveness that people want. We give them we give them certainty around how much it's going to cost each month. This is just a fixed monthly subscription from $79 a month. And that's really resonated with people, because I think if you've got a real business and you're using WordPress, then you don't want to be hiring a developer each time you want to change. You just want someone reliable there and available to fix things when they don't work the way you want. And I think that's why it's sort of taken off from zero to probably 1,000 or so customers over the last 2 years.
That's really awesome. And how'd you go about marketing that and getting the word out about it? You know, a lot of the listeners of this show are people that are either, you know, early stage entrepreneurs, you know, small business owners, people that are trying to really get the word out about what they're doing, and to hear the success you've had with WP Engine in such a short period of time. Can you break it down, some of the things that you did to get the word out there and get people in there?
Yeah, WP Curve, not WP Engine.
I meant WP Curve. I use WP Engine as my hosting, so it just rolls off the tongue. But
we do too, and in many ways, it's their story was kind of similar, because Jason had his own personal blog that he was writing a lot of content on, and he sort of knew a lot of these big influencers and created this service that he knew a lot of people needed. And I sort of did the same thing, which is I had my personal content that I was putting out there each week. And, you know, I knew the problems that I could solve for a lot of the people in my audience. And I just set about doing more and more content to get attention for what we're doing. And eventually that turned from my personal content into the WP Curve blog, which is now managed by a team of content people that work for us, that work for me. We've just doubled down on content. The more time's gone on, the more we've put into the content. And that's really the only marketing we've done. And that's why my last book, Content Machine, is all about that, because that's really the only marketing I've ever done that I've ever been able to make work for anything is content marketing. And I wanted to tell a story about how we were able to do that.
All right. Well, I think that's actually a good place for us to go next, because it's really where I wanted to spend the bulk of our time together. Again, I know we only have, you know, probably another 20 minutes or so to talk, but I really want to dig deep into content, since that is your main area of expertise. It's what most people know you for. I was hoping you could, one, just give a brief overview of what the book Content Machine is about, and tell people why they might want to look at it. Who's it for?
Yeah, I mean, I think the reality with content marketing is a lot of people do it when they start a business, mainly because they don't have any money to spend on advertising, which is fine. I actually think that's a good thing, because I think if you're starting a business and you're spending money on paid ads, there's a 99% chance that money's going to be wasted, because you just don't know the numbers. You don't know where it's going. It's going to be really hard for you to compete with the big companies that have the paid advertising really down pat. Content marketing sort of became this thing, almost like a default for people when they start a business online. They start a blog and start putting content out there. But the problem is that it doesn't work for most people, and most people don't know why. So I wanted to, A, solve the problem of why I think it worked for us and why it doesn't work for most other people, and B, give people a framework to follow to actually exit themselves from the process. Much like you do when you start a business, you don't start a business that relies completely on you. If you did that, you wouldn't be an entrepreneur. You'd just be creating a job for yourself. You start a business and you get other people to do the work, so you can work on strategy and other people can do the implementation. And I wanted to take the same approach with content marketing, which is what we did with WP Curve. I laid out the strategy. I got my hands dirty early on and did all the content for us. But eventually I was ready to move on. I wanted to get someone else in to manage all of that. So I wrote all the procedures and looked at all the software and tools to use. I hired someone to come in and do it, and our content has been better ever since doing that. So I wanted to tell the story of how to make content marketing work, but also how to scale that in an entrepreneurial way so that you can get on and do other things rather than spending all your day writing blog posts.
So two questions about that. I mean, the first is just in terms of you scaling it and bringing other people into it, do you think that your voice is missed from that process? And then I guess the second thing is, you know, anytime I hear about, you know, kind of finding the secret sauce of sorts and finding a process that works and then sharing it with people, if enough people are then doing that process, do you think it then creates a situation where that no longer is effective and a new process needs to be born out of it that differentiates between that?
Okay, which question am I going to answer
first? Start with the first. Your voice missing. Tell me about that first.
Well, okay. Well, the voice thing I'll say really quickly is very simple. And I talk about this in the book a little bit, which is you can choose how you want to approach this. You can do whatever content you want, and then at some stage you can turn that content off and turn different type of content on if that's what you want to do. We did that with our podcast, but having said that, our written content was a lot more successful than the podcast. So I think it's going to be hard to turn your voice off if you're doing certain types of content. If you're doing a podcast, if you're doing video, it's going to be very hard to turn your voice off. If you're doing written content, it's not that hard. And I had procedures for everything. I had a lot of people tell me, you know, the content is just as good as it was before. Most people, to be honest, didn't even notice that I wasn't doing it anymore. When I started talking about this at conferences, I'd say, like, I haven't actually written a post on the WP Curve blog in 6 months, and now it's been almost 12 months. I think I've written one post in 12 months. No one even cares. Like, it's a bit of a hit to the ego, but in reality, people are there for the content. And so it was reasonably easy to exit myself from that. What was the other question? Because that was a good one.
Yeah. So the idea of, you know, we found that this works. Okay. Now everybody's doing what works. Does that make it less effective? Or is it just the sort of thing where if you find something that really does work, there's always going to be enough people that are doing it a different way that this will stand out?
Yeah. So a couple of ways I'm going to address this one, because this is a good one. The first is part of what works is differentiation. That's the number one thing that you can do with content marketing to make it work, and that is to stand out from what other people are doing. So by definition, not everyone can differentiate. If you understand differentiation as like a core factor in your content, then you understand that, you know, what you do now might not work next month. So like the example, and I talk about this specifically in the book, the example with Pat Flynn, for example, doing his income reports, and we started doing them in 2012 as well. Back then, I think he started them in 2008 or something like that.
But yeah, they go way back.
Yeah, it was revolutionary. When I was doing it in 2012, it was sort of, you know, it was a few people were doing them. It was enough to get me attention. You do them now, no one cares. It's not different anymore. So differentiation is something you need to understand. The other thing I'd say is most people just really suck at this. And you know, in the online world, some people are quite good at it. In the offline world, people universally suck at it. So we've got a long way to go before normal businesses understand that when you start a business, you don't have to take out an ad in Yellow Pages to market your business or put a sign out the front. That's not how you do business anymore. There's a different way of doing it that a lot of offline businesses have never even heard of. You know, a lot of bloggers haven't even heard of it. I presented at ProBlogger a couple of weeks ago. And a lot of bloggers haven't even heard of the term content marketing. Like, no one is doing this well. There's so long to go before people really understand this and really do it well that I wouldn't be the slightest bit worried that you're too far behind on it. But what I would say is if you're in the online world or in like hyper competitive industries like that, then it's really hard for you to stand out. So it's much harder for you to stand out there than it is with, say, the brewery I'm working on, where we can just put out a bunch of content saying what we're doing, you know, saying how we're making the beers, how we're doing design and stuff like that, and it'll get a lot of attention. And it's a pretty basic approach. But if you're in the online world and you're up against loads of competition that are doing really amazing content, then it's going to be much, much harder.
So that's interesting that you think, or just from your perspective, that content marketing is so is still so kind of far behind or unknown, relatively speaking. And it's funny, maybe it's because I'm just so immersed in this world. It's just a term that I hear so many times per day that it almost seems like, okay, well, what's the next thing? But I think you're right, because in reality, if I think about, you know, who we talk to as prospects or clients, in general, we're not finding that that's a term that they're very familiar with, or even if they are, they're not very familiar with the application and practice of doing it. But also
how many people are actually doing it well and getting results? Like in the book, I talk about the Content Marketing Institute survey, which showed that I think 38% of people weren't happy with the results they were getting from their content. And these are like Content Marketing Institute members. They're like content marketing groupies.
Yep.
And the majority of them aren't making content marketing work. I mean, what hope does that leave for the rest of us? I think it's pretty clear that a lot of people are putting a lot of content out there, but they're not getting the results they want. Like, a lot of people will take the advice of, you know, writing every day or just focusing on the quantity of the content or just doing what's working for someone else, and they'll just completely miss the point. So, you know, while people talk about it, no one is really doing it well. Like back in the day, people used to talk about SEO all the time, but no one really had a clue. Like, I had to really dig in deep to work out exactly how to do SEO when I used to do it like 6 or 7 years ago. Like, everyone would talk about it, but no one would actually tell you what these people were doing to get better SEO rankings. And I think it's like that with content marketing now. Everyone talks about it, but how many people are actually using it to build a business? Like, how many people have used content marketing alone to build a $1 million business in the last couple of years? I think there's not too many people who've been able to do that. So that's why I wanted to tell this story, because I think a lot of people talk about it, but a lot of people don't have the results to back it up. And I get asked about that all the time. And it was just one of those things where it was something that I knew sort of needed to be told.
Well, because this is your world and this is something that you've been doing for a while and you've been able to build businesses on the backs of it and you help people with this, can you tell us, you know, give us a few things, one or two tips, something that's practical but that's also going to kind of make that light bulb go off for any of our listeners, something where they can, you know, you give them a tip or two, something where they can think about something differently or approach something differently. It could be tactical or strategic, where they can go out and take something from this podcast and go and make something in their content marketing efforts.
Well, I think the best thing I can tell people is your content getting traction right now? And by traction, I would look at some sort of metric around sharing. Look at whether people are tweeting your content, whether they're commenting and, you know, telling you it's having a big impact or telling you they're using it. Something human and real, not visits, not likes. Something that indicates that people are actually really getting a lot of benefit from what you're putting out. And if the answer is no to that question, which it normally is, if you're to be really honest with yourself, then you need to go back to the fundamentals. And I think the problem that a lot of content marketers have is they ask themselves the wrong questions. Like, they focus too much on things like optimizing and, you know, increasing conversions and all the stuff that you do at the end once something is working. But the fundamentals are that you need to put content out there that people care about. It needs to stand out. Otherwise, no one's going to even know about it. It needs to be executed really, really well. So if those things aren't in place, and it also needs to be linked to the business in some way. You might be doing a lot of good content, but it might not be a logical link between that content and actually selling some products. Mm-hmm. So those fundamental things are the best things people can focus on. If your content's not getting traction or if your business is not growing because of your content, you don't need to read a blog post on increasing conversions. You need to go back to the fundamentals, test out a bunch of stuff and try to work out what kind of content people really care about. And if you're doing videos and they're not really, really good quality and, you know, they're just not getting traction, then stop doing it. Go and do something else that is going to work and do something that you feel you can do really well. I found that writing is easier to do well, even if you're not a good writer, and I wouldn't regard myself as a good writer, but it is something you can do well by just refining it and perfecting it, observing what other people are doing, looking at people who are doing it really well and just getting some inspiration from that and just deciding that what you're going to do is put out something that's amazing rather than just writing for 2 hours every day, making that mental shift from quantity to quality. And I think that's where people go wrong. It's back at that fundamental level. So if you're doing content, it's not getting traction, go back to the start and do something of higher quality that's a little bit different. Test what works and do more of what works.
What would you say then is the point at which you should quit, though, where you should stop doing a particular thing? Do you have any sort of a general rule where you say, you know, give it 3 months, give it 3 weeks, give it 5 episodes? You know, what's the point at which, because there's a certain point, it's like, you know, you do something once and, oh, nobody read it. That's not obviously what you're recommending, but what's the point at which you think it's probably best to cash it in or try something new?
Well, I think this is like, I see a lot of parallels between startups generally and content marketing, because I see content marketing as an entrepreneurial exercise. It's not what bloggers do. Bloggers create blog posts, but content marketers are entrepreneurs. They have to figure out a way to build a business from their content. And there's a lot of parallels between the two. And if you ask me the question, how do you know when a business is not working, whether to move on to the next one, I'll give you the exact same answer, which is that there are no rules around that. There's no, like, I would love to have a quantitative metric, which some people have tried to come up with, but I think it's BS. I think it's all gut feel. I mean, I know in my case, I've worked on businesses for 7 years, then after that decided they were no good. I've worked on other ones for a few weeks and then decided that they were no good. And I've gotten better at really being honest with myself about what's getting traction and when I've given something a good enough crack versus when I'm just not doing it well enough and I need to do it better. And I think it's a gut feel thing. It's an experience thing. It's just being honest with yourself and knowing that you've had a good enough crack at something and moving on to test something else. But you can also, with content, test a bunch of things at once And that's what I did early on. I did every type of content you could possibly imagine. I did it all at once, and I really paid attention to what was working. And the first thing I ever did that worked was a really long written piece that was a really practical, actionable piece of content, lots of images, really nicely laid out, nicely executed, really, really useful, long, probably 3,000 words. And once I got a post like that that got real traction, that was when I knew, like, I could do more of that, and that would give me better results. So you want to hit on something that goes really well. Some people use Periscope and they're a good fit for that. Some people do video and that works really well for them. Some people do Instagram and that works really well for them. You need to find something that's going to work really well for you.
Fair points. Fair points. Well, I know we're just a time check. Where are you right now? How are we doing? Because I have a few more things I'd love to cover with you, but I also want to be sensitive to your time. I know you got to run to a meeting.
Yeah, I've got a couple of minutes. So.
All right, cool. There's a couple other things I just want to cover, and I got to figure out what are the ones that are most important here. But I guess I would start with content strategy and editorial calendaring. You know, just being planful. How much does that play a factor into what you do personally and what you've done for WP Curve and what you recommend for people that are doing content content marketing as a business driver?
Well, I think consistency is very important, but again, this stuff is not as important as getting the quality right. And I think, like, early on, I didn't have any content schedule or calendar or anything like that. I just focused purely on create a bunch of stuff and figure out what's going to work. Once I've figured out something that worked, we put a schedule in place and procedures for absolutely everything that meant we could deliver on that consistently each month. And If your guys go to contentmachine.com/resources, you can grab all those Google Docs that I've used. It's free. There's no email opt-in. You don't need to buy the book. You can use all that stuff yourself. But what I would say to that is don't be thinking about that early, because you're back in that mindset of thinking mechanically instead of creatively. And you need to get to the point first of creating something that's high quality. And then the scale part comes after that. And in the book, the scale component is the last chapter, not the first one. But I think a lot of people naturally think about that sort of stuff first.
Got it. Paid channels and paid promotion. How much is that playing a factor into everything that you've been doing? Or have you been able to really leverage organic sharing, reaching out to the right people, connecting with influencers, using the right keywords, and all the things you do on the organic side? How much has paid been a factor, especially with a lot of the changes these networks have been putting in place to make it more difficult to get organic reach?
Oh, that's a good question. It's probably too big for me to answer quickly. I mean, we don't really do any paid stuff. We're starting to experiment with Facebook ads, but not that I'm saying other people shouldn't. I mean, for a two-year-old company, we probably should be starting to look at this stuff now, which we are. I think there's always opportunities for organic reach. I mean, it's Facebook, for example. Like, I put stuff on my personal Facebook, and I have Facebook groups that work really well for our content. Our page does absolutely nothing. We don't do a good job of it. It doesn't get any traction. So we just don't focus on the page. There's other platforms coming out like Periscope and Blab. Instagram at the moment, organic, still organic stuff is so powerful on Instagram. It's not going to stay that way forever. But the newer social networks, the organic opportunities are huge. Still Google, like Google's still our number one referrer, and they're the most advanced and established referrer of traffic in existence for most of us, but we still get the majority of our traffic organically from Google. So there's still opportunities there if you're creating high quality stuff. But I think it does get a little bit harder. Like early on, something like AdWords was so easy. You know, Facebook targeting, retargeting now is starting to get pretty good value. But 10 years down the track, that stuff is going to be like yellow pages. So I think getting in early can be useful. Some of the new apps like Blab and Periscope, Instagram to a lesser extent, I think are really big opportunities at the moment for content. So I think if you can think more broadly about content, think about it's not just writing blog posts. It could be a whole number of different things you can do on a bunch of different channels. If you can get in early on some of these channels, there are a lot of opportunities for building a quick audience much more quicker than you could on some of these older platforms.
Got it. All right, cool. Well, I'm going to leave you with this last quick question. It's a two-parter. The first is just list off a few tools that you think are kind of indispensable. They've been really helpful for you and you think anybody getting into content marketing might want to consider. And then the second piece is just tell people where they can go and be social with you, where they can connect with you, learn more about you. And I'll be sure to put all of this stuff in the show notes.
Okay, cool. Well, my stuff, contentmachine.com is the URL for the site, and my website, dannorris.me, has all of my projects on it. So I've got communities, the craft beer thing, the books, WP Curve, all of that you can get on there. My social media handle is at @thedannorris on all the different platforms. First question I forgot already.
First question was just a few indispensable tools.
Apps, tools,
anything like that.
Okay, so apps for working with a remote team. Slack has been absolute game changer for us.
We love it.
Trello,
it's incredible, isn't it?
We use that for. Sorry.
We love it too. Slack, it's just incredible.
Yeah, we got on that really early, and that's been huge for us. I use it for working with contractors and guest writers and everything as well. Trello we use for everything, for an editorial calendar. Co-schedule is another one, but I find Trello is perfectly fine. We use that for everything. Use Google Docs for everything else. BuzzSumo is a really cool tool for doing research on other people's blogs and what's getting traction. Click2Tweet.com is a really good tool to have when you email influencers, give them a link to tweet. Thunderclap's a really good tool for projects if you're going to set up, like I did that with the book launch, if you want to get a group of people together to help tweet or Facebook share something you've got coming out. Facebook groups are huge for me. I've been using Facebook groups for Content Machine and 7-Day Startup. They've been really good. Optimized press or lead pages for quick landing pages. We use Infusionsoft, the WP Curve. If you want an automated email system that does absolutely everything, I use Drip for my personal stuff, which is an automated email system that just does that. It's nice and simple. What else? What else is important? Content marketing. We use for social media sharing images. You use Canva if you want to use your computer. Or I use WordSwag for like quick quotes. Quotes go really well for me on social media platforms like Instagram and Facebook as well. So WordSwag is a good mobile app for that. Canva is a good app for the computer for that. There's a plugin, Click2Tweet plugin, that you can put on your blog post as well, where you can just, you don't have to use Click2Tweet.com. You can just insert the Click2Tweet directly into the blog post. So we've been doing that and we get good results with that. I normally do that after people sign up for something as well. Like if they sign up for something, give them a Click2Tweet on that following page, and a lot of people will share that. Like I've got a 7-day startup video course, and after you sign up for that, you get the Click2Tweet, and I'm getting a tweet every second day from that little plugin. That's really useful. What do we do for opt-ins? I like the idea of having opt-ins at the end of the post and on the side. We use a lockable widget called, I think, Q3 locked widget or something for the sidebar. Lead pages is good for the little pop-up. I don't like pop-ups, but when people click to subscribe on something, lead pages is good for that overlay thing. I think they call it lead links or something. Mm-hmm. Optimized Press does the same thing as well. So if people just want a one-off fee for building landing pages, they can also do that feature where it pops up after people click rather than having the email box on the page. Optimized Press is awesome for that. I built almost the whole 7-day startup site using Optimized Press. We use Stripe for payments, and WP Pay Stripe is a really simple Stripe plugin for WordPress. It costs about $50. You can use that for selling stuff after you produce your content as well. So that's probably a bunch of things people can look at for what I'm using at the moment.
Well, that is an extremely exhaustive list, and I wrote down as many of them as my little fingers could type. I know you're a busy dude.
Well,
you got to get back to things.
At WP Curve, we wrote a post. We've got a tool, a thing you can download, which talks about all the apps we use. If you Google 35 tools, WP Curve or something, there's a post that talks about 35 different pieces of software we use to run the business. And there's probably more now. That was a few months ago. But we use a lot of software. Some paid, some free. To be honest, most of those big ones I've mentioned are free, but that's how we're able to run this business 100% remotely, and a lot of that is to do with content in some way or another, especially like we use a lot of the content in the automated email sequences. So if you're using content, you can reuse it all over the place with tools like Infusionsoft. So all that stuff sort of comes back to content in a way.
All right, excellent.
Mention.net's another one. Mention.net's super useful. If you're doing content, you want to know when other people are talking about you, Mention.net will send you an email and you can get on there and comment and reply to them.
Awesome. All right, well, I'll put every single one of these that I can into the show notes, and I'll definitely put a link to the 35 tools on the WP Curve blog. Dan, thanks so much for setting aside the time. Come on and talk to me about content marketing. Everybody out there that's listening, please check out the book, Content Machine, and check out Dan Norris online, and definitely shoot him a line. Let him know how much you enjoyed this podcast and appreciate him coming on. So, Dan, we'll definitely talk again soon, and for all of you out there listening, thanks so much. be sure to give us a review on iTunes and tell us what you loved about it, what you hated about it, and have a great rest of your day. Take care.
Thanks, mate.
Thanks again for tuning in. We hope you enjoyed that episode of Conversations. Be sure to go over to iTunes or Stitcher and give us a rating. Tell us what you love about the show, what you hate about the show. And we hope you come back for our next episode. Take care.